Hello and welcome to the Methodist podcast published on the 28th of April 2022. This week we continue to explore faith and the environment. With our personal lifestyle choices having an impact on the environment, I chat with friends and family about the steps that they are taking to try and lead more ethically and environmentally sound lives. I'm sat here with two of my favourite guiding leaders in Jersey, and we are sat in one of our favourite establishments in St Helier, putting the world to right, talking about environmentalism.
Hi, I'm Carla. I am a guide leader, and I am what I call myself a non-confrontational vegetarian who will happily cook for you.
Hello, I am Jasmine, and I am the guide section commissioner in Jersey, and I like to ride my bike.
We have been chewing the fat about environmental sustainability and what are we doing in our own personal lives about to make it, and it's been an interesting conversation, hasn't it?
I am always very mindful of the fact that we can all make individual choices to be more environmentally sustainable, and as someone who's also a vegetarian, partly for environmental reasons, I see that adding up, in the sense that there are a lot more vegetarian options when you go out to eat, and a lot more options, especially vegan options, in supermarkets. So sometimes I get the sense that those individual choices do add up, but I am always mindful that there needs to, you know, the kind of the powers that be, the broader powers, also need to play a part in that. But definitely the example of like veggie options in supermarkets and when you eat out is something that makes me think, oh, maybe actually if all of us are making those changes, there is a broader societal effect.
I find going around the supermarket I find myself getting quite angry sometimes about some of the choices that people are making, and I become exceptionally judgmental about people, and I know it's not...
Oh, go on. Is this because it's all like chicken nuggets or chicken nuggets? Or
no,
like...
Oh, no, it's far worse than that. I did have an ex-boyfriend once upon a time. Mm-hmm. Who was a lot more hardcore than I was, and whenever he was in a supermarket and he saw somebody buying unfairly traded coffee, like Kenko or something, he would stop them and say, "Do you know what you're doing?"
No way.
Oh yeah, and he would like sit and argue with them until they put the Kenko down and picked up the fairly traded coffee, which.
You can't see the face I'm pulling. I'm impressed at his dedication, but as someone who's very non-confrontational, like, I feel like I'm getting hives just thinking about doing that.
I was impressed by what he did.
Yeah.
Well, needless to say, ex-boyfriend, that relationship sadly didn't last out, but that was my lasting impression of him, and his dedication, and that's impressive. But making those consumer choices as a shopper... I think particularly in our economic environment is exceptionally challenging. Mm-hmm. The other judgy thing that I do in the supermarket is when people buy bottled water.
I'm very judgy about that as well.
I'm going to pluck up the courage one day and tap the person on the shoulder and say, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. I guess just thinking of that, coming back to what you were saying about the kind of challenges of doing that in today's environment, you would think that having noticed this, I'd be there like loading up on like chicken, I don't know how you say it.
This is the fake chicken. Yeah.
And actually, the majority of those kind of pre-packaged like vegan substitutes are like, I find them too expensive to get regularly. So yeah. I'm a fairly like boring old school like vegetarian in the sense of like I cook with chickpeas and lentils and like tofu, but actually like it is something I think about a lot, in the sense of I don't think vegetarianism or veganism is inherently more expensive, but I think if you're going to do it in a way that's not expensive, you have to have a lot of like free time to be soaking your lentils or, you know, pressing your tofu or doing research into kind of
alternatives. Might not necessarily be financially expensive, but it has an expense in a different capacity of your time as well.
Yeah.
Jasmine, you've led a really interesting campaign in Jersey about period products, and you made an interesting purchase today to become more environmentally friendly.
I purchased a moon cup, which I've seen round and about and heard people reviewing, and I just thought I'd give it a go. Obviously, having a period once a month, you use a lot of not reusable products like sanitary towels and tampons and things like that, and I just thought I'd give it a go. And it can take a while to get used to, but definitely worth looking into.
And what inspired you to do that?
I've just been doing a lot of research recently. I'm quite an anxious person, so using sanitary towels, I'm always very worried about leaking. And tampons just don't work for me, so I just thought to try something different. They can be quite secure when used properly, and then it helps the environment and saves money in the long run.
I was having a confession about my judginess in supermarkets. Well, two things. First of all, whenever I do my shop in a supermarket, and I always get something for the food bank, I'll always buy period products to put in the food bank rather than pasta or whatever, because that's just my personal commitment to how I support that. But
I have never understood the point of applicator tampons, because to me that just seems like an extra layer of something that you are literally going to use for 2 seconds. And I think, I don't know, I guess it's just funny how it's almost like this lens comes down when you start thinking about stuff, and there are some things that it comes down for. It's like the environmental lens, when you're like, that's a pointless piece of plastic, but it hasn't come down for this other piece of plastic, or, you know, that's a really, like, unlike environmentally friendly thing to do, but there's probably all sorts of other things that you're doing. It's almost kind of like this lens comes down. But I guess with all of these things, the aim is not to be perfect. It's to be making an effort in some way to improve the world. Something I've noticed since moving back to Jersey, so having grown up here and then lived in the UK for 8 years and then coming back, distances that I used to walk in the UK without thinking about, because for the majority of the time I didn't have a car, so I lived largely in cities, but distances I used to do without thinking about are like, people will comment on the fact that that's a long way to walk, or are you sure you don't need a lift? And I know it's partly, you know, because, you know, Jersey is an island of a certain size, lots of, you know, we're not like a city where there's public transport going everywhere, but it, I think, as I do notice that car dependency in Jersey, you know, when I say to people, oh, I used to walk 40 minutes to and from work in the morning, people are like, every day? Even if it was raining? Why? You know, or if I'm like, oh no, that's fine, you know, I'll cycle back or get the bus. And it's really lovely that people want to offer you a lift, but I do think we are very, very car dependent in Jersey. And I know that's partly design, but I think it's probably also habit as well. But it's a mixture of the two, I think.
I think I read a statistic when I first arrived on the island. It said there are 100,000 people on Jersey and 150,000 cars.
Yeah, there are more cars than people on the island going, and it's like the air quality in some places in town especially is awful.
Is a disgrace. But the biggest elephant in the room living on an island in terms of environmentalism is, if you want to get off, RIP environment.
Yeah. And that's something I, again, you know, I'd never put my, like, I'm the best environmentalist ever because I stopped eating meat, or I'm doing this, or I recycle. But it is one of those moments when I think this sits at odds with what I'm trying to do on an environmental level. But at the same time, even if it's not jetting off on a fancy holiday, like, most of my friends live in the UK. If I ever want to see them, I have to get on a plane or a ferry. You know, and I don't have unlimited amounts of annual leave, like none of us do. So sometimes you do go across for, you know, 4 days, 5 days. And I know you, Jenny, you have to go over for work all the time. But yes, it is a big... I don't know if it's a problem of living in an island or if it's... That's what we're used to. But
yeah, convenience culture, yeah. I think.
But I, for one, would find it very difficult to be like, I'm only taking one flight a year, ever.
Wait, honey, I'm married to a pilot.
Yeah.
Do you want to know a really horrific, horrific environmental fact about planes?
Oh.
So, a 747 from London to Hong Kong takes 120 tonnes worth of fuel. 1 tonne of fuel will run your car for your entire life.
No.
Yeah, man. Yeah. 120 tonnes of fuel for that one flight.
God.
Yeah. As we finish up, what one thing are you doing in your life that we could encourage our listeners to do?
I'm going to be that person. Eat one less meal of red meat a week. It's super easy to do now, like vegetarian recipes are amazing, but the cumulative effect of everyone doing that consistently for the environment, for the people who work in meat production, for everything, would be huge.
I think people should walk and cycle more to work. I've been cycling a lot more. I actually saw Carla on my way to work on my bike the other week. It was fantastic. And then
at this point, you looked very cute when you were cycling. So just putting that one out there, she did look adorable.
And then after work, to be outside a little bit more and not in front of a screen, I've been cycling like the long ways home or meeting some friends and going out for cycles. So I have driven my car once in the past 2 weeks.
Jasmine and Carla, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny.
I'm always excited to learn about new ways to be a bit more environmental and save the planet. And I'm always looking around people's houses to get some ideas. And when I came to visit my sister, I saw some great ideas. Tell me what I can do to be more environmentally sustainable.
Okay, so I thought we could focus on cleaning today because washing is something that's really important when you've got a family, because you've got a school uniform, any sports clothes to wash, and sometimes it feels like the washing machine is constantly on.
Because you've got two boys, haven't you?
Two boys, yeah. So we're talking today about washing, so I thought I'll show you a couple of things that we've started to do to be a little bit more sustainable and also to avoid as much plastic as possible. So the first thing that we've done is we've switched to washing powder. So instead of having plastic tabs or individual washing tablets, I've got some washing powder now. So then you can add as little or as much washing powder as you want in your washing machine. And also it means that it comes in a big cardboard box. So there's no plastic being used there at all, apart from my little spoon that I use.
Because it's really obvious, but I don't quite think about it. Sometimes you do a small load, and actually, if you have got those little small liquid tablets, a liquid tablet's going to do a big load. So it's just done. But with a powder, you can really change how much and discern how much you use.
You can measure out as little or as much as you want, which actually means that it'll go even further because you're using less in your wash. And something else that we've done is used an eco egg. So I've got my eco egg here, and this is...
I've never come across this. What is this?
Yeah, it's like... Well, it is a plastic egg, but you put little balls of detergent inside along with some abrasive balls, and you put that in your washing machine, and you can use that for up to about 210 washes, and then, of course, you can refill the egg as well, which means that you can continue to use the... It's called an eco egg. It's called a laundry egg. And it just kind of helps a little bit more with sustainable washing.
What does it do, though? I don't understand.
It's just a detergent inside. But you put the little...
So the balls are the detergent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why would you use the powder?
Well, sometimes you need... This is quite a gentle wash. The laundry egg is a gentle wash. You don't use them at the same time. This is a gentle wash, but if you've got very
smelly
stained
boys.
Clothes, yeah, then you need the washing powder.
Oh, okay.
Yep, so there's that. And, of course, there's another thing that our mum and our grandparents used to do, which is when you're washing hands in the sink, instead of using liquid soap, which comes in a plastic bottle, just to buy a bar of soap. And that is very sustainable. There's no plastic involved there. And so it just does the job just as well. It's not as fancy or as exciting, but again, you can use as little or as much as you need.
Do you tend to use the more environmentally friendly detergents for cleaning? So a popular one is Fairy. I call it Fairy Up Liquid, but there's things like Ecova. Do you tend to switch to those?
You can do, yeah. They can often be a little bit more expensive, which is something that you need to think of nowadays when you're on a budget. And some people find that they need to use more of that because the detergent is a little less abrasive. So sometimes you're thinking economically rather than sustainability about that. But
I've noticed something that's happened in this house, and I'm not sure if it's because you've got two boys that are under 11. Or is it a distinctive choice? And that whenever I've come to use a toilet, there's often yellow mellow.
Yeah.
Is that a choice?
Yeah. If we try not to make as many flushes as we can. So it's just another thing, isn't it, to save water. We're with United Utilities because we're in the north. United Utilities provide our water, and it's something on the website that they suggest that you do. They say try to reduce your flushes if you can, and that's what we do. And I think the stigma of having urine in your toilet is becoming less and less.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you. I'm inspired. I'm going to go out and buy myself an eco egg.
Enjoy.
Perhaps you're like me, you grew up with a fair trade stall with coffee after church once a month, and it was a highlight. If you were a kid like me, it was wonderful because it was an excuse to persuade your mum to buy those delicious chocolate-covered raisins. But fair trade now is something that is far more in our everyday public mind. It's not just something in a church, it's in the supermarkets, and it's a conscious choice that we choose to make each time we go out shopping. Fair trade is a system of certification that aims to ensure a set of standards are met in the production and supply of a product or ingredient. And for farmers or workers, fair trade means workers' rights, safer working conditions and a fairer pay. And for shoppers like me and you, it means a really high quality, ethically produced product. And I've got some fun facts about fair trade to share with you today. There are more than 1.9 million farmers and workers in fair trade certified producer organisations, and 17% of them are farmers, and 41% of workers in fair trade are women. And there has been 160 million in fair trade premium paid to farmers and workers in 2020 alone. And on average, each fair trade producer organisation received more than 90,000 in fair trade premium. So suddenly, for me, buying the fairly traded tea bags seems like a worthwhile deal. But there is still that age-old problem of, oh, I don't think it tastes the same. I just prefer the taste of my whatever insert brand that you prefer here over fair trade chocolate or tea or any product you might like. So I thought I'd put this to the test, and I spoke to my two nephews, Will and Ben, and we did a good old-fashioned chocolate tasting experiment.
And tell me your name.
Ben!
You say, my name is Benjamin Kelly.
My name's Benjamin Kelly!
And my name's William Kelly.
And I'm also here with my sister.
Hello, I'm Rebecca.
And we're going to be talking about fair trade today, aren't we?
Yeah.
Now, Will, you've been doing this in school, haven't you? What can you tell me about fair trade?
Fair trade is a thing because the farmers who, like, make, like, produce them, they only got, like, one or 2p. And now, because of fair trade, they're getting at least, like, £1 or £2.
And it's good for the families and communities as well if the farmers get paid a bit more, isn't it?
Yeah.
What items do you see in the shops that have got fair trade on them? Can you remember the fair trade symbol?
Yeah, there's lots of bananas, lots of coffee beans, and, well, obviously, chocolate.
Mmm, yeah. And we've got some chocolate today, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do. And we're going to have a little taste test. So we're going to unwrap some chocolate. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes, and we're going to see if we can taste the difference between the fair trade chocolate and the other chocolates that we've got.
That okay. Sounds like a chocolate. Wait, which ones are fair trade and which ones aren't?
Well, we've got to guess, haven't we? We're going to see if we can guess the difference between the chocolates. Okay. So, Will, are you going to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first.
Okay. You're closing your eyes. You're putting your finger on a piece of chocolate. Pop it in your mouth. What does it taste like? Can you guess which one it is?
I think it is dairy milk chocolate.
Mmm. And what does our survey say? Let's see what it actually is. Oh, it's Galaxy.
Oh, what?
Are you surprised?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Benny, your turn. Close your eyes. Pick up a chocolate, pop it in your mouth.
Hard,
yeah,
and chocolatey, but I don't know what flavour it is.
What does the chocolate taste like? Is it nice?
Yeah, it's nice.
What chocolate do you think it is?
Chocolate milk.
Good choice. Yeah, it had a crunch, didn't it?
Yeah.
And that was a Malteser.
I did not know the name, so I guessed it.
It was a good guess. It was a good guess, and crunchy. That was a good guess.
Yeah.
Okay, Becky.
Mmm. Well, this one tastes very chocolatey and very milky, but I don't think it is dairy milk because it doesn't taste like dairy milk. It's much richer than dairy milk, so I think it's probably the green and blacks, which is our fair trade chocolate.
Mm, okay.
Well, it tastes really nice.
Right. And let's have a look. You were right.
Yeah.
That was the right one. Okay. Right. I'm going to close my eyes. William, I'm going to ask you to put one in my hand so I can have a taste. Okay. This is hard for me because I don't like chocolate. It's horrible. I don't like chocolate very much. But the Cadbury's one, it says on the packet, Cocoa Life. Do you know what that means?
Is it another saying fair trade?
On the back it says, partnering.
It's back to world.
Partnering with Fair Trade Foundation. So, yeah, it is a little bit better. Does anyone want to try another chocolate? Right, yeah, Will, your turn. Okay, he's got your eyes closed. What does it taste like?
It's caramel. And just from the inside, I know that it's Aero.
Oh. What kind of a chocolate is Aero? It says on the back of here, it says Rainforest Alliance, People and Nature and Cocoa Plant. On the packet it says, working with the Rainforest Alliance to support cocoa farmers and their communities. Find out more at ra.org. Rainforest Alliance. Okay, one more. This has got a very creamy middle. And I don't think I've tasted it so far yet. So I'm just opening my eyes and it's a piece of the Lindt chocolate.
Oh, what does the Lindt say on the back of its packet? Oh, it doesn't say anything at all. Nothing about being responsibly grown at all. Interesting. So we like the dairy milk, you like the Malteser. Becky, which one's your favourite?
I like the green and blacks. Very creamy and rich.
And you also get the extra bonus that it's quite ethical.
Oh, yes.
As well. So when you're buying chocolate in the shops, do you think you'd look for something that was fair trade?
Yeah. I can't explain it. It just tastes better.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for your help, boys. And Becky, thank you. You can say bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. And eat more chocolate.
Hello, my name is Dr. Paul Curtis. I recently completed a PhD at Bangor University researching the naturalistic foundations of morality.
Now, in this podcast episode, I've been thinking about environment and why it's important to us. And when we were having a chat the other day, we've spoken a lot about your PhD over the 6 years. You were arguing that actually your PhD or naturalistic morality has a lot to do with the environment. Now, it's not something that I would have naturally, would have put together about the environment and why it's important. But you argued that it is. So tell us, why does it matter to us as a church? And why does it matter to us personally and to our listeners who are hearing this?
Well, in simple terms, you know, we need to think about how morality came into being. You know, what's its purpose, if it has a purpose? How do we judge? And what are our oughts all aimed at? Now, from a naturalistic perspective, an evolutionary perspective, our oughts should be aimed at the continuation of the human species. Now, I'm not saying that's what our ethical and our judgments are based on. That's a different story. But if we think about what we want actually out of the world, as it were, for humanity, it would be ultimately the continuation of humanity. This would be an obvious evolutionary explanation as well as to why we've got morality. So one of the things that we require as humans to live on this earth is an earth that can sustain us. That is an ecosystem which God or nature put in place that created us in the first place. You know, we all need food, we all need water, we all need air. If we're polluting air, polluting our water and putting toxins in our food, then that is going to have obvious repercussions. So they would become unethical in that sense. So, you know, it's incredibly important. It's the foundations of our ethics is really the continuation of our species.
It's there's quite an easy argument as Christians that we should look after the world's Genesis creation. Is the obvious answer, but it's for people who aren't Christians, or there might be some Christians out there who just don't think that environmentalism is that important. I mean, why should I bother recycling? I don't think it works anyway. Is something that you hear a lot. So why should we care? And that age old question of I can't make a difference. Me and my little. I'm one person, I just can't do anything.
Yeah, I think this is one of the ignorances of the past, and something that we're now being enlightened about is just how everything we do actually can affect people across the world. We're understanding that our crisp packets and our plastic can end up clogging Indonesian estuaries and being in landfills in China and all these sorts of things. Our texts and tweets now go global. You know, as an individual, you are now more powerful than you've ever been in terms of destroying the world and the environment around you. Our culture prizes excess. You know, it is lauding the idea of super yachts and private jets and many houses.
All you can eat buffets.
All you can eat. Yeah, we are in in worship of consumption at the minute, which is obviously not a Christian value. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's more about, you know, keeping a lid on things, so to speak, keeping a lid on your passions, not denying them, but controlling them. And that would have huge environmental effects. You know, you could really make the point that Jesus came to save the world with his teaching, not humanity for an afterlife or some, you know, appropriation of pagan ideas, but this incidentally is one thing we can point the finger at Christianity at and say, hang on, are Christians really being loving of the world? I mean, take for example John and James in the Bible. They are very anti the world, so we have to look at what is the true dogma of Christianity. Is it about really saving this world, or is it about actually this world doesn't really matter because we've got another one to go to, a sort of escape? And so yes, I mean, Christianity has to get its sort of dogmatic ducks in a line, really, and say, well, what are we really preaching here? Do we want to save the world, save the people in the world for life continuing on earth, or can we just do what we want with it? Because essentially we're not really that fussed about it, because we've got this other idea of what eternal life is all about.
So what would you say then as a Methodist and a philosopher?
I would say that Christianity went wrong in about 350-ish in the 4th century and started not really talking about Jesus's teachings and how we could actually save the world, the actual world, the real world, but started then saying about what you had to believe about Jesus and various things, which has nothing really to do with the real world. It might help you to become better people in certain senses, but if you're now discarding the world, then I think that is unethical. So we have to actually ask the question, are some religious dogmas actually unethical?
And to the person who has a can of pop and can't be bothered to recycle it, as a Methodist and a philosopher, what would you say to them?
I'd say do your very best to be as eco-friendly as possible, because ultimately it does have effects in the world. Really, we need the governments to get on board, and we need them all to work together. This is not something, as you've said, it's not something an individual can do in its entirety. They can contribute, but it really needs the whole of the world to get on board with this one uniting principle, which is basically to save ourselves from ourselves, something that Jesus can definitely take some credit for in getting the ball rolling. But as I say, something I think that has been missed down the years, the actual reality of his teaching and how it affects the world, has been passed over for other more supernatural ideas. So we should realign Christianity along those Jesus teaching, his ideas, the way he was saying, yeah, come together. Don't be greedy. Don't go, you know, looking for the most selfish things in life. It's not all about you. It's not all about a nation trying to grab everything.
Love your neighbour.
Yeah, and basically, yeah, work together, because we are now and always have been in a fight for our survival, our existence. It's not something that is God-given, so to speak. You know, God wants us maybe to live, but we're going to have to work for it. It's not something that's just going to happen. You know, we will die, we decay, we get injured. We are not completely, we're not like Superman or anything like that. You know, that's not how we were created. So, you know, let's get real about this.
Thank you, Dr. Paul Curtis, for challenging us, and particularly the church, to get our dogmatic ducks in a row.
Thank you for listening to this week's Methodist podcast from myself, Reverend Jenny Pathmaraja. Goodbye.